Episode 1. Welcome to the 99 Podcast, a show dedicated to the LA 99 seat theater community. I'm Benjamin Schwartz.
And I am Matt Mitchell. I'm going to be giving you a little rundown of how the show works today. We're going to be doing some reviews on the show. We're going to be doing some interviews with people in the 99 seat community. And really having a good time
doing it. Yeah. I think a good time is an accurate summation
because theater's fun and you want to have as much fun talking about it as you do seeing it.
Absolutely. And we love Los Angeles theater. We are just excited to be here and thank you for joining us on the show today. You know, usually we would have a review to go over a show that we've seen. But you know, we'll save that for a future episode. But we want to talk about at least how we go ahead and review things.
Yeah, how we're going to kind of run down how we look at shows. Yes, we're going to be doing some reviews and we're going to be doing some interviews, but we're both active in the community. And so when we're going to be reviewing things, it's going to be coming from a place of not necessarily just how it makes us feel, but, you know, being involved and as theater makers.
Yeah.
I think we have a pretty deep bench of
productions and having an inside perspective into what it takes as far as producing, even carpentry and lighting and all the challenges of putting on 99-seat theater specific to this city.
Yeah.
So from that aspect, we really are going to focus on the design, the lighting, the set, the sound, and then go into the acting, directing,
and
in the end, the story is going to make it or break it. Also, there will be no score.
Yes, because I think scoring is not really the point here. It's because all of reviewing is just personal opinion. If you happen to agree with our opinion or like what we've been saying, then that's great, and you can make a decision as to whether this is something you want to check out. But scoring kind of doesn't matter these days, I don't think.
We're also excited about bringing on artists from the LA theater community here, from the productions that we're going to go and review, people that inspire us, and people that we've worked with in the past.
Yeah, to give either a highlight of things to come. You know, I think we're always looking forward to what's happening next in the community while at the same time celebrating the past. So we're going to start off with a couple of interviews, but we're going to be interviewing each other to kind of give a sense of who we are.
Yeah, and how the show works.
Yeah. So, Benjamin Schwartz. Ben, I've known you since... Was it 2015?
2000, yeah, correct.
Because you were doing a show at Fringe, which one was that?
Called Zip Ties.
Right, which was about...
It was about a couple hitmen waiting for a boss to get there while they had a guy tied to a chair. And it was a Tarantino-esque dark comedy with, you know, bullets flying on stage and blood packets exploding and all that. So it was fun.
I remember it well.
Yeah. you were doing another show at that time, Danza, the boss?
Yeah, Boss, the Untold Tony Danza Story.
Yeah,
I was doing that, which is fun. And then I remember we met up at Three Clubs at the end of Fringe, and we're just kind of asking one another, what do you got coming up next? And you had said you wanted to do...
A film noir?
Yeah.
Yeah, more than anything else. And you had a similar idea, and... over the next year, we converged and came up with Angel's Flight, which was also with Cherry Poppins.
Mm-hmm.
And together, it was just like really big kind of production.
It was fantastic. And I remember when we were initially talking about it, we were having the conversation at Three Clubs. And you came up with the idea of like, this place has a great throwback 40s vibe, so we can actually write it for this space.
Yeah.
Which is great. I love when you can have shows that work with the space that you're actually watching them. There was...
Absolutely.
It was like it wasn't immersive, but at the same time, it was kind of, just in terms of vibe.
It would have been a really expensive build to have exactly what we needed, you know, to to put up to that show. And instead, we just knew exactly the room and the unique layout of there. And that's why site-specific theater can be so interesting, too. If you really, really figure out exactly what the location is sending as far as the connotations, the images, and the architecture and everything else, we can really use that to your advantage.
So going into that, what is something that really got you into theater? Was there a moment, or was there a show, or...
Yeah, I remember I always did theater as a kid, but I when I went to go see a Broadway show, specifically Hairspray, which is not the greatest musical, but we saw the original Broadway cast, me and my sister, and we were in the fourth row in the center. It was just a really kind of a life-changing experience that moment. I said, I want to do this in some capacity. It became starting into acting and wanting to do musicals, but figuring out that I was best as a writer, and it just sort of blossomed into where it's at.
And that's really, I know, because I know you direct as well, but are you really primarily look at yourself as a playwright?
Yeah, I don't feel like I do anything else as best as that. But recently, the past couple of years, I've kind of been forced to take on the producer aspect as well and get into marketing and social media and specifically the challenges of Los Angeles theater. And, you know, just how it's different than any other market, any other city that does theater.
Within that, let's talk about what I want to call your passion CV. Sure. So not necessarily breaking down every show that you've ever done, but in terms of highlights of the things that you really loved working on, where do you feel things started? And up to where are things now? And do you notice that, are there through lines to that?
I guess that I started playing music when I was a kid. Like 12, I picked up the bass guitar, electric bass, and played that and started playing bands. And I play guitar now and was doing bands and recorded for a while. So there, I started that early. I was also doing magic when I was like 13 and was part of the Magic Castle Junior Group. And performed there for a couple years, so that was strange. But during that, I had, again, a kind of shuffle some theater, but was really stretched far between doing so many different things. And it wasn't until college I really focused on, I guess, writing and taking theater seriously. But as far as passions and let go, I guess film has always been a huge passion and sort of inspiration for me, and specifically directors like Wes Anderson and writers like Paul Thomas Anderson and Hitchcock and all of the old, again, film noir greats of the, like Billy Wilder and all that. So
I've noticed that there has been, at least for a majority of the things that I've seen of yours, there is a very kind of cinematic quality to the way you write, not necessarily in dialogue, but the way it feels it should be presented is very kind of cinematic, even if it feels one take cinematic.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I tend to always come at it from how is this best going to be a play, because I like things to be set in one location and in one hour, just continuous thoughts, that stream of consciousness, yet being economical with that stream of consciousness, which all my writing classes have told me how to cut away at that. But I feel like I have a hard time writing cinema, a film, because of the fact that it's also visual. But I feel like I'm just writing dialogue, and I don't really see that correlation between the film aspect of my writing, yet I am borrowing from a lot of film ideas, I guess. So that's where it kind of comes. I don't know. It's a strange balance. And I guess it's just kind of like the process of finding my own voice is through all of the different media that I enjoy, like video games and also and in movies and and this golden age of television that we've lived through and are kind of coming into like a valley almost a little bit right now. There's a couple good shows left, but it's getting harder to find them at this point.
There's a kind of an interesting shift where movies are now turning into television shows, because I think there's more cinematic television than ever before, and there's more of it. So I would agree that there's probably a lot more crap, but just because there's a lot more content. What is there, do you think, about cinema or the cinematic storytelling that works or doesn't work in 99 Theater that you've seen?
I think that primarily it's a lot of times jumping between elaborate set locations when there's a lot of furniture being dragged on and off stage and set changes. That just reminds people of all the bad theater that they've seen before, that where that's happened. So whether it's necessary or not, it's still to be aware that it has that effect on the audience. So what do you do with that? Great, make it, there's some really moody music that's in between that really, really captures the tone, or maybe someone coming out in the spotlight, just making these transitions seamless at all time and having the audience be constantly entertained and not disengaging from the material, unless you really, really want them to, in a Brechtian sort of way. That's totally different. But I don't think that just hearing people shuffle out on stage is really what that effect is trying to achieve.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the best way of doing it.
And being in a very Instagram, you know, society where everything is like fast, 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 I feel like that connection to film is, we're talking about the cut. We're cutting from one thing to another and from one thing to another, one location to another. Not even about angles, but like, now I'm in Munich, now I'm in somewhere else, now I'm in somewhere else.
Yeah.
And we're have a society that is used to, I'm going to flip from one image to another image to another image to another image.
Chances are they were just doing that before the lights went down on your show.
Right.
They're constantly just having to new information. And at the same time, not having to remember any of it either. So how do you like change from that mentality that they've just been in all day long and then ask them to just take in a story that is traditionally told so slow and poetically, you know, and what we love about theater, the past, but where is the future of that going? Like adapting to a new audience that unfortunately our brains are just changing.
And it's not even about here's what you need to do for that. It's more the knowledge that that's what's happening. You know, it's not like here's how you do that. It's more having the knowledge that this is what people are going to come in doing and feeling and how they're going to be, you know, connected to their world. And if you know that, how can you take your production and work it so that you can take them out of that and bring them along and not want them to go back into their world and take a look at their phone and not give them the opportunity to, oh, we've got a gigantic set change or there's not drama. It's almost like you need to have more drama and energy on stage than ever before because we're so easily distracted.
And I've seen it in audiences that frequent expensive regional theaters around here, pulling out their phones, older demographics pulling out their phones in the middle of a show to check the time or to see who's texting or calling, and phones going off constantly. That's something that if it's going to be happening, maybe we need to let that happen in the theater even and adjust our story or what's happening accordingly, or remove it completely from them at the start somehow. I know that there's one company in town that did that or for a production where they had everyone drop it into like a sack that had a number.
Oh, interesting.
And before the show started, people were forced to communicate with each other and instead of being on their phone, and it created this kind of this vibe in the audience that we're now missing once cell phones, smartphones became in the pocket of every single person.
That's interesting. And I like how you were saying you can kind of go either way.
Yeah.
You can have the, I'm going to walk in the door and I'm going to put my phone away so I'm forced to talk with people, or I'm going to make the experience of seeing this show connected so that have your phone out. That's great.
Yeah.
But I'm going to connect this to the story.
Yeah.
And to my production.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be on your phone, you need to go to this website because it's going to help you connect to what's happening right in front of you.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah. And, but the middle ground is really just hard right now.
Yeah.
And that's of the past, and that's where people are currently. But I think that that's going to phase out eventually. People are going to realize that you have to do either or, because all the immersive theater productions always make sure that you leave things in the car, that you can't really take things with you.
Yeah.
Or it's the like another art exhibit installation where you're taking photos next to it and you're encouraged to share and you know, live stream everything, you know, and take video, and exact opposite. So and that both of them have their own market and you know, pros and cons, of course.
I want to talk about some of the plays, like actual plays that you've either written and or produced. Give me two or three, kind of in order that they've been done, whether you want to tell me about your first play that you ever did, all the way up to kind of your most recent, either what you're working on or we're going to, and talk to me a little bit about them and why they were important to you and how they kind of came up. Quick synopsis-y kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the turning point for me, just meeting people like you and getting established in the community, was Zip Ties, for sure. And it taught me that anyone can go out and just go and do it, then you totally should, if that's what your passion is, to just go and produce it yourself, or, you know, it, just make it happen. Don't let time pass by on something like that.
What's turning you on right now? Like, is it work? Is it seeing stuff? Is there a topic? Is there a theme? Is there...
I guess, like, immersive theater is really exciting, I think. The whole medium and art form is something that everyone's trying to figure out how to do.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone knows how to do it yet. And everyone's trying to figure out what the conventions of the art form are, and what is successful and what's not, and trying to copy awesome productions like Sleep No More, and still, again, making everything LA and unique to this audience, because there's a strong community involved in that scene that I feel like isn't approaching the traditional theater.
Yeah.
And because of all the challenges that traditional theater faces. So.
Good. All right, so we got a speed round for you.
Yeah.
You cool with the speed round?
Sure.
All right, I'm going to throw you a bunch of different things and answer them as quickly as you can.
Okay.
You all right?
Yeah.
You got it?
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Okay, so knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself when you first got into theater?
Other than turn back, I would say that just keep on spitting out ideas, and there's one thing out of 100 that's going to work, so just keep on churning through them, and don't be afraid to, I guess, copy and steal from the best, too, because too many people try to be their own thing, like, right off the bat, and it's kind of hard to just, like, figure that out right away. You really have to do a bunch of different styles before you feel like you know what you're best at. And lastly, write out other scripts, like, as you watch, like on TV or something, write the actual dialogue down and the visuals, and you'll end up of your favorite films or whatever, and you really can see how you would write in that style and how it lays out on paper.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that now. All right, so what is there something that comes up in your work often or all the time that you feel like people might not notice?
Mm-hmm. There is constantly an animal in pretty much each of my shows. I don't know why that is. I just was talking about the dog play, but the last short play that I just did was called Man versus Armadillo. Zip Ties had this like deathly rat that would chew through someone's stomach, and Angel's Flight had a fish, and anyway, there's one for each. Like, so my short plays had a monkey involved. Like, it was just, there's always been like an animal that is surrounded, like, not, I don't even know if it's sort of like the spirit of that animal, I guess, echoes throughout the entire theme that serves it best. Whether it's a dopey kind of fish or whether it's a hard casing of an armadillo with like a really soft interior, or whether it's a really gnarly, like vicious rat or something like that, it always kind of evokes that mood, that character that you associate
with. I was gonna say, and you usually tend to make that animal, you know, the traits of that animal become the traits of one of the characters or of the theme that mm-hmm. you're going for, I've noticed as yeah. well. Is there a place that really inspires you? It could be an area of the world, the coffee shop next door, just any kind of corner of your room, but a specific yeah. place that...
I'll preface it with, I think best when I escape. So video games are a big thing for me, just going into a world. So I would say just the land of a certain video game would me escaping there is a mm-hmm. great place for me to go off and think.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's like a location that doesn't exist in the world. If I have a problem or something I'm trying to solve in the back of my head that I can't, like with a story or a character, I let myself go, okay, I'm not going to figure out this at this second. I'm going to go escape for a little while and come back. And I usually have that problem already worked out in my head somewhere in the back.
What do you love?
In general, I love art and any form of it. Whether it's good or bad, I always learn something from it. And I also love to just talk about it. And, you know, if I could just flip this around on you.
Okay.
60 seconds. Like, okay. What's your career trajectory that you would say? Like, around there. Just go.
Okay. I was I wanted to do this my entire life. And the first thing that I really remember was, I think it was second grade, I took a class, after school class, where they wanted you to kind of write your own play or take a story that you'd written and turn it into a play. And I wrote a detective story where I did the Humphrey Bogart kind of talk to the audience. So I was here and I went to this place and then I talked to this guy. It was something I always knew that I wanted to do.
Mm.
So I was writing while I was, you know, acting, and that's the thing that I've always really enjoyed. And I went to school for that. My parents were smart enough to say, okay, you're failing out of algebra. If we promise to bring you around to see art schools, will you try harder? And I went, okay. And I'm really, really glad I went to college because I learned about a lot of, not only a ton of history, but about what I really enjoyed that I didn't even know that I enjoyed. Mm. And just new experiences in terms of, you know, it's where I discovered film noir. It's where mm-hmm. I discovered, you know, David Mamet. It's where I discovered, you know, older playwrights and newer playwrights and different styles, which I thought were great. I'm very into comedy, but a very specific type of comedy.
If you could give to the audience a specific example of a movie or a play that you think that they've seen that best emulates what you try to achieve? What do you think that would be?
I want everything I do to be like the Lego movie.
That's good.
Because everything is going to be nuts and out there. I want you to follow the story and really be in love with characters. But everything that's going on needs to be slightly heightened, really funny, but right in the middle of it, something really, really emotional.
Mm.
Really emotional. I try to have... The thing that I love about the Lego movie is not only is it super funny and super goofy and incredible colors and it really, really moves, but the point of the whole thing, and that last moment, spoiler alert for everybody, when you find out that the Lego movie is all in some kid's head and it's imagination, and you see what he really cares about, and it's about his connection to his father, and you understand how the entire story so far has been connected to this one thing, and it's just this unbelievable heartfelt moment where I was just crying rivers at the Lego movie. And then it gets resolved and you get to pop back in with the fun ending. And that's what I try to do with every show. I want to have it be incredibly goofy. And then I want to, when you're open, it's like how people create horror, right? If you ever watch a horror movie, probably the time you're going to be the most scared is right after you laugh. You know, they're going to do something that makes you laugh, and you're going to laugh because that gets you open, and then they're going to come in with the scare because that's when they can affect you.
That's a good point, to have that emotional swing there.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. And that's why I think if you have something that is goofy and open and people are open and laughing and really enjoying themselves, whatever dramatic moment you're going to have is going to hit all the more. So if there's a theme or if there's something I want people to get out of what I'm trying to say, that's when I'm going to get them. Mm. And then we're going to come back and we're going to finish the fun ride.
As far as a quick trajectory, like as far as inspiration or passions is there any like unique hobbies that you might have had or something too, to, you know, briefly summate that?
It's been... You know, I really wish I was more eclectic. Honestly, I really wish I was more eclectic. I wish I could say, well, you know, when I play my music or when I do my this or when I do my this, but I've been very... It's only focused. Been recently that I've kind of been looking outside, but very similar to what you were talking about. I'm very into movies, very into literature, which I say, but that I haven't, like, you know, been reading enough over the course of the last decade. But a lot of the stuff that I find myself inspired by is Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Edgar Allan Poe.
You have, you know, a show that you wrote called Nevermore.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was definitely Edgar Allan Poe inspired.
100%. I wanted to do a thing. I was talking with a friend of mine, Dave, before I really started directing what I want to call professionally, years ago. And I said, I had this image in my head that I wanted to do the Telltale Heart. And however it was going to be done, there was just going to be a gigantic eyeball on stage the whole time, just staring at the audience, you know, disconnected from the story underneath to just give you this feeling. Mm. Which is how, and connecting that back to 99 Seat Theater specifically, how you make the audience feel when they walk into the room and when they're sitting down. What are you surrounding them with and how do they feel?
Mm.
Because that's going to draw them into what's happening. If, you know, we were saying, if you look at the Geffen or if you look at the LA Opera or whatever, there's going to be these grand ballroom type things where, oh my gosh, look at this amazing thing. And everyone has this kind of open awe.
Yeah, they have the budget to be able to manipulate their stage.
Exactly.
And how? What are the challenges now that 99 Seat Theater has, with considering that it's just most of the time four black walls,
right,
or some brick, right, or some, you know, pylons in the middle obstructing an audience's view somehow,
right?
What do you think that people can do about those kind of limitations.
I think just being aware of it. It's not even that here are the things that you can do. It's not like there's a list so much as I think going into a project that maybe it's as soon as you've finished the project and you really know how it feels and you know how you want people to come in. A lot of people do it with music. You know, as soon as if it's just a black box and you don't have set or anything when they come in, you'll be playing a certain type of music, which will get people into a certain mood. You know, that's
I love that.
It's kind of a given.
Yeah. I like music loud too.
Yeah. And then, but then it depends on what you want them to feel. You sure. Because do you want it to feel like a rock concert? Do you want it to feel like a, and however you let them in, their experience, you were talking about, site specific and experiential theater. I think that all theater should feel as soon as you walk through the door towards your seat, you should immediately start feeling what that show is going to be.
When do you think that whole experience actually starts for the audience member? Is it when they walk through the door? Is it when the show starts? Is it when they approach the theater to get their tickets and how they bought the tickets? Is it when they got out of their car and they're parking? When do you think that that whole experience starts for the audience now?
It really varies. And I've seen a number of things where we went to go see a show the other day that we're going to be reviewing later on, the Johnny Cycle, the Speakeasy Society. And one of the things that they had was it was located at the Mausoleum. And on the ride over, they had a pre-recorded segment about who you are and your past and the story, that when you listen to that, you really get into a very specific mind frame about the time period and what the show is going to be like, so that by the time half an hour later you arrive at the location, you already have a feeling and you have a sense of this thing. So you walk in already feeling that way.
An expectation.
An expectation as well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think the earlier, and I loved that. I thought that was great because I think the earlier you can get people immersed, and I don't mean immersive theater in the sense, this you can have it be, you know, fourth wall Oscar Wilde. Fine, that's great.
Right.
But then how are you going to make people feel that show before anyone walks on stage?
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to you to decide whether you want them to feel that way buying their ticket, whether you want them to feel that way going into the lobby. Do you want them to just be at a theater, and as soon as they open the doors to go into the theater, once they enter the theater, are they stepping into another world? I love, as I know you were talking about Disneyland earlier, I love being able to step into something and really feeling it. Like being outside and walking through the doors into a place that's been air conditioned for a long time and it just hits you.
Oh.
And that feeling of like, oh, that's so great. I want to do that with worlds, with locations. And you can do that. You can build that for your stories and your theater.
Yeah. Sleep No More.
Sleep No More is a great example. It's a great example.
Where each floor of this converted warehouse, renamed the McKittrick Hotel, is a graveyard or a check-in booth for a hotel or a bedroom with a pool in the middle or a bath in the middle. Or it's all over the place. It's,
yeah.
And it's amazing that you just are dropped into this world.
But the introduction is you open the, you walk up the steps into a 1920s jazz lounge.
Yeah.
And that's where you're sitting and having a drink before the show is allowed to start. You know, before they give you your mask to start experiencing the show, you're hanging out in a 1920s jazz lounge. And the story that they're telling takes place in the 1920s. So you're already feeling that vibe.
Absolutely.
I've been to shows where they will start like that. Like, say, they'll start off playing a certain type of music and you're starting to feel a certain way and I'm getting the vibe and I'm getting the thing. And then someone from production team will come out and say, "Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. The show's already started."
Yeah.
Like, I felt the show start when I was sitting in my chair and someone came out and started playing music. That wasn't an introductory thing. That's part of your show.
It's about earning the trust, I feel like, of the audience. And once you've earned that trust, if you bring it back down, it's hard to just gain it once again.
You know what it is? You were talking about magic earlier. You were talking about going to the Magic Castle. Imagine what would happen if you were doing a magic trick, right, where you were making something levitate. And in the middle of making this thing levitate, you turn to the audience and say, "By the way, thank you so much for coming to the Magic Castle. You know, there's a lot of us here who are real magicians, so make sure that you get..." No, you've got people spellbound. You've created this amazing thing where as soon as they get there, they're wrapped up in this. You don't want to ever let them... You don't want to cut yourself off at the knees, because then you need to ramp them back up again.
Yeah. Yeah. So why would you drag them down scene changes that take forever?
Yeah.
And let them, give them the opportunity to check their phone.
Yeah.
Or think about what's happening in the real world if it doesn't relate to the story thematically.
Right. Exactly. Create a world for people and let them live in it, and don't let them go. It is your job as a theater practitioner to enthrall, to grab someone and have them live in the world of your story from the moment they enter to the moment they leave. And if you can do that, that is just as enthralling as going into a 3D movie, right? Mm. That, 'cause that's what we're kind of fighting against now, you know, where there is a... By the way, I'm a huge movie fan. I'm a big cinema fanatic. But unless it's a really, even if it's a really, really bad movie, chances are you could sit in the movie theater and you're still going to be involved with the film.
Right.
Right? It is rare that I'm going to leave a movie theater because a movie is that bad. However, I leave theater when it's really, really bad. So you have to have that extra thing. You got to try that extra bit to make sure that the energy that you have going in your production doesn't stop. It never flags, right? Not to say that everything needs to be a 10, because, right, you know, storytelling is about flow.
It's not about pace.
Right, exactly.
It's about having that energy
be absolutely
there the entire time.
Totally agree.
And as far as... what do you have planned for the future?
I usually do very, very goofy stuff. So I started off doing a show in 2014 at the Hollywood Fringe Festival called Romeo and Juliet in Hell, which is a story. It picks up when Romeo and Juliet die, like the very end of the play. And
so it's a sequel.
It is a sequel. And Romeo and Juliet are in, well, hell. But hell is a very specific kind of place, right? Heaven and hell are...
little devils with pitchforks?
Tiny little devils with pitchforks. Completely my idea.
Yeah.
Very original. No. Heaven and hell are these fictional concepts that human beings have come up with, right? Mm-hmm. So I've decided that only fictional people can go there. Mm-hmm. So over the course of a story or a play or a movie or what have you, if a character survives the story, they go to heaven. If they die over the course of the story, they go to hell, right?
Sure. Seems logical.
Right? And
so where is it? Where is the shift then? Where's the wackiness?
The wackiness comes in where Romeo and Juliet are in their own personal hell. And their personal hell is listening to Tony from West Side Story sing Maria for eternity.
That does sound like hell.
Yes, and they're not happy about it. But Tybalt and Mercutio show up, and they say, all right, we're gonna do you a favor. Tibble and Mercutio are now friends because they have discovered and decided that the only reason that they killed one another is because of these two and their stupid puppy love, which they recognize. It's like, no, our two families have been feuding for a long time. But these two 13-year-olds being all lovey-dovey is pretty obnoxious, and they can't stand it. And they also know that they've been causing nightmares for countless high school students throughout the ages because they're aware of the fact that they're fictional.
It sounds amazing.
It's fun.
I think you should wait for people to just buy the ticket.
Oh, like, yeah. Well, here's the one twist that the actual show is about, though. Romeo and Juliet want to get out of their personal hell. And there's only one way you can do that, which is you need to see the sins of your life flash before your eyes, which means that all of Shakespeare's dead characters, Hamlet, Lady M, Othello, perform the play Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, well, that... yeah. Well, I think everyone's lining up at this moment.
It's going to be very, very fun. Yeah, that one's actually going up starting November 2nd at Force of Nature Productions in North Hollywood.
So. Sounds fun. What is your own song of personal hell? Your tiny bubbles?
If I was forced to listen to it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I don't know.
Put you on the spot.
Yeah.
Mine would be Every Rose Has Its Thorn by Poison.
Yeah.
I've never, ever chosen to listen to that song, yet I've heard it hundreds of times, and I don't know why it's around. And again...
I get it. There are... I guarantee there's another one somewhere that I have successfully gotten out of my head and I can't think of it, but for some reason, I think it's because I read something about it the other day. If someone played Cotton Eye Joe over and 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 I was unable to get away from it or kill myself because I was already dead, yeah, that's hell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So let me ask you what's kind of exciting you right now. Like, is a movie or a play or an artist or something, what's really like oiling your gears, as they like to say?
Who are these people that like to say that?
Yeah, what's really like turning the faucet on your drip? As the kids like to say.
Kids, stop saying that.
Who's stocking the fridge?
There's
I like metaphors.
I'm noticing that these are really, and wow, they're, I'm gonna write these down.
This is where my comedy comes into play.
Yeah, I never metaphor I didn't like. Thank you. I'll be here all night. Not only am I really excited about the show that I'm working on, but I'm making a big shift into working on... I've got multiple projects going on at once. You know, I have a screenwriting partner. I've got a production group that I'm a part of. You know, I'm doing a lot of theater and film directing these days. And what's really turning me on is meeting a lot of new people and discovering the next step. I know that's kind of vague, but I'm really happy with where things have been going recently, and there's a very, very big shift that's about to take place, and I have no idea what that is. And I'm really stoked about it. And in the meantime, I'm really kind of
nervous about what that may be at the same time?
Not really. No? Not really nervous. It's trying to just live in right now. You know, trying to just be and say, I don't know what's going to happen, but I know things are going to be fine.
And go with the flow.
Go with the flow. You know, be in the place. And because a lot of things that have just come up came out of seemingly nowhere. Mm-hmm. You know, and I could, of course, go back and say this happened because of this happened because of this happened, but just being ready for whatever's going to hit, because there's something, and I don't know what it is yet.
If you were to give your former self just getting into theater some advice, what would you tell yourself?
Don't listen to anybody. Just do it.
What do you cover up? What do you, like, not let people see?
It's funny. I let some of it out with my last show. The last show I did was called Black Boxing, mm-hmm. and it was a big commentary on one person shows, specifically at Fringe. But the point of it was everybody wants to present this idea of themselves, which talk about, you were talking about
social media.
Whew, yeah. We all want to present this version of ourselves. When if you're doing theater, it's supposed to be about stripping away and not seeing a version of you, but finding out really what's making you tick. And it's usually the thing that hurts the most is what is making you tick, you know? And I think the more you can examine that, the stronger you'll be and the more impactful, because it's hurting everyone. You know, the things that we all, whether or not you, like my specific show was about my depression. I don't care if you're depressed or not. You're going to connect to it because we've all felt a certain way. Even if you've never been clinically depressed and you've never felt, you are going to feel, because you've felt that kind of pain in your own personal way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't talk about that kind of stuff a lot. You know, I always talk about the version that of me that I don't let a lot of people see is the one that really wants to get dressed up in all black with like black fingernails and black lipstick and hang out at the goth club. Not how I'm known, but that's very much, I want to just be that hideaway drinking absinthe in like a dark bar and just melt into a velvet couch. You know, that is very much my thing that I don't let out very often.
Well, it sounds like you have a soul born at a different time period.
It feels like that sometimes, yeah.
With all that said, what do you love?
I love ideas. And specifically, I love unique ways of discussing and staging ideas. The idea of fate, right? One of the best ways to do that is like, how many times can we talk about Macbeth,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, we can sit around, you know, drinking whatever and talk about whether fate really exists and, you know, what have you. But then what if we just talk about how this one particular artistic statement deals with that idea, you know, and which is a way to take other people's opinions and bring it into a conversation that becomes intensely personal. So that's, I really like that when you can get deeper on a subject that, yeah.
Yeah, and the best way, the most powerful way to do that is through art.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because no words is going to capture it. It has to be a mix of, you know, the poetics of mm-hmm. spectacle, music, and language, and all and everything yep. involved. And that's what theater really is. So, yeah, pretty much that's the last question of our speed round. That pretty much wraps up.
It does. Yeah.
Everything we got going on here today. This is the 99 Seat Podcast, where we celebrate Los Angeles theater, the community, the shows, This is the first episode. Next episode, we'll be bringing on a guest, talking about and reviewing the production that we saw that they're a part of. And yeah, we're looking forward to seeing you over here next time.
Yeah, check us out online. You can write to us or give us a quick call if you've got a show you'd like us to see, or if there's something you'd like to hear us talk about, or if you'd like to be involved, just let us know. And we'll see you next time.